For over 10 years, we've been bringing you killer metal music and frank discussions about heavy metal. Wait, who the hell is Frank? You are tuned into MSR Cast, brought to you by Mainstream Resistance. Here are your hosts, Kerry the Metal Geek and Sean the Metal Pigeon. Keep it metal.
Hi, this is James Avera. I'm going back to old school. MSR Cast? Oh, come on. Yes, we've been around for a long time, and we're not going away. This is James Avera from Hellstar. Support your local scene.
We'll be right back. Welcome, everyone, to episode number 213 of MSR Cast, your metal podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am Carrie, the Metal Geek, along with...
Sean, the Metal Pigeon.
How are you doing, sir?
Very good. I'm very good.
You seem happy.
I'm upbeat today because the temperature has gone down like 20 degrees here in Houston.
Pretty much,
it was like 90 degrees 2 days ago.
No, it was 86 degrees this morning.
Yeah. And so that's one thing. A lot of metal, and it seems like it's I'm finally feel like I'm on top of the metal thing. Like I'm on top of all the new releases. I have an idea of what's coming out just around the corner tomorrow and everything. And I feel
you're working on your top albums.
Yeah, I actually am.
Me too.
I was doing that a little bit today. It's gotten more difficult because September and October have yielded some really good stuff, and it's made me really think about some of the stuff that came out earlier in the year.
We were talking about one such album earlier tonight.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it yet, but it's I was sort of racking my brain trying to figure out where they fit on my list.
Yeah.
You know, when we get together, we always have a little brainstorm about session about what we're looking forward to.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, like, some of the stuff that I was listening to in the spring that I for sure thought, I was like, well, this is so good. I don't see how this could possibly...
Do you have an example?
Like, okay, for that, you know, the Panopticon album that came out in the spring, I really loved that album when it first came out, and it was really unique, and it was a double disc thing that was like, it was like that kind of Appalachia take on black metal and stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
And I really thought that was a really great record, and I still do, but I didn't listen to it in a couple months. So when I went back and listened to it the other day, when I was going through my list of nominees, I was just thinking, like, man, I wonder, can I actually justify including it if I haven't gone back to listen to it throughout the year? And that's always something I try to keep in mind when I think about these things at the end of the year. It's like, how often did you listen to it? Not just whether you thought it was great at the time, you know? So that's going to be a tough one.
Oh.
Because I think that album it sailed under the radar too much.
Yeah.
But I think everyone should be know.
I forgot about it until you just brought it to my attention
again.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally forgot about it.
Yeah.
But you know what I did not forget about? New Bloodbath.
Nope. Hard to forget about this one.
It's killer, man.
It is a really good record, yeah.
They've taken their style, I think, to they've gone back a little bit, if you know what I mean, the way with their guitar tone.
Yeah.
It's not as polished as some of the other albums.
It's dirtier.
Dirtier, yeah. That's a good word. It's really fucking good, though. The album is called The Arrow of Satan is Drawn, still featuring Mr. Holmes on vocals.
Yeah.
Second album with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, second album.
Yeah, I definitely feel more instantaneous enjoyment than the first one with him.
Okay, I can see that.
It's not like I didn't like the last one, but this one just kind of hits more in the jugular. It's almost like the way the new At the Gates album I found like more instant with me than the last one. So,
and the song that we heard, Blood Aside, which... It's one of their, you know, catchier songs on the album. And there's nothing wrong with saying that Bloodbath can write catchy fucking death metal. Because they do.
Yeah, they do.
So this new album, the song that we heard, features a couple people from Carcass.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
So Jeff Walker. It's pretty cool. I'm trying to pull up more information on the album. So Jeff Walker, John Walker, and Carl Willits from Memoriam and Expulse Thrower all on this track.
That's cool.
Guest vocals on this track. They all do vocals.
Wow. Yeah.
Not bad, huh?
Yeah.
That's like a fucking old school death metal like supergroup right there.
Yeah. And you know, the thing is, like, I'm very much hoping for a Bloodbath tour through here.
They're playing a couple shows, but it's like, what is it? The Maryland Death Fest.
Right.
And maybe one other show. They're doing the 70,000 Ton.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was hoping they would string together a tour around those things.
Yeah.
So,
I would drive to go see them.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would drive to go check them out. I'm really on their side right now because, And I know I'm not talking out of turn because nothing's – these things aren't that – but I have a friend who does a lot of art, and he has been basically in the works to do some art for the for Bloodbath.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we're rooting for that to happen. Everyone's just kind of like hoping it'll go through. I it should by all accounts, so – yeah,
T-shirts and stuff like that. Right?
I want to get a shirt with his art on it. That'd be awesome. When if
what's the Bloodbath logo on it?
And if it happens, we will definitely talk about it on the podcast. And
we'll have him come on.
Yeah,
talk about it.
Yeah,
talk about the process. That'd be cool.
Because he's done art for Between the Buried and Me and stuff, and it's like really this little side thing he's doing that's taking off. So, he's trying to get it to take off. So
right. Well, it sounds like it is.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
I know him. He's a good, great fucking artist.
Great artist. Yeah. A crazy talent. I don't know how people draw that well.
I
have no artistic talent whatsoever.
I don't either. I can't even fucking draw a stick figure.
Yeah.
And like my co-host on Metal Geeks, Dave, he's a fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Him and his whole family, man. I'm just like, how do you fucking do that?
Yeah.
I just don't have it. I never have.
Man, if I had that kind of talent, I'd be doing all sorts of things I have in my head. Like, yeah, I want to see a scene from, you know, Lord of the Rings that was never drawn or something, you know, just stuff like that. Yeah.
We have a couple concerts that we were at recently. Do you want to talk about one now? Then we can talk about another one later.
Yeah.
I don't want to go too long here because we have a lot of great music to play tonight. But let's talk about the first show they went to.
Which was the first show? I can't remember. Oh, yeah, that was the... It was the Carrick Angren.
That's right.
Morris Principium Est Wolfheart show. Yeah.
And two opening bands, two local bands, Trotten and Epic Death,
mm-hmm.
who I think we're going to have Epic Death on the show soon.
Okay.
Have them come in for an interview. You didn't see any of the either opening bands where you got there too late?
Dude, okay, so this club is in a part of Houston that's just damn hard to get to. There's no real easy way to get to that venue.
Unless you live over there.
Unless you live over there. It's in a part of town that's just like not really close to anything major arterial highway wise. So you have to go through, and it's just I actually drove past the venue because I couldn't see because everything's so packed together there. Shopping center after shopping center. I overshot it and had to turn back. It was... We got there basically in time just before Wolfheart started going on, so...
That's right.
Yeah, I missed those bands, and I didn't want to either, so that sucked. But, and this venue, I'm not going to talk bad about the venue, because I thought it was a cool environment.
I thought it was a decent venue, I mean...
It was a fine venue, but it's just like, it's one of those venues where you're like...
It's called Acadia Live, right?
Yeah, Acadia Bar and Grill.
Yeah.
And it's just like one of those... like dingy venues that has like really like old like video golf machines and stuff in the corner, and you're just sort of like looking around going, this is probably not a place I'd be in like normally.
You know what I did like about it though? They did have $4 whiskey and Coke.
That is cool.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I had a few of those.
Yeah, it reminded me of BFE Rock Club in that way. It was like very bare bones venue, like stripped down to the essentials.
It was great to see. Okay, so it was great to see the tour there.
Yeah.
I've been a huge Wolfheart fan for a while now, since their 2017 album, Tiz, whatever it was called.
Whatever
it was. And they just put a brand new album out, Constellation of the Black...
The Black Light?
Black Light, yeah. Which I was actually jamming today in the car on the way home from work.
Which we played on the last episode.
We did. I freaking love Wolfheart. I don't know how much we touched on the album, but this one's a little bit different. It's a little bit heavier.
Way heavier, I think.
But there's still a lot of the melodic undertones in the music and everything. Enough to satisfy if you're not like a straight, you know, death metal guy. You'll still find a lot to get into.
Oh, yeah. It's very much like Finnish melodic death metal DNA. Yeah. But the album I compare it to right away, instantaneously, is Insomnium's Winter's Gate, because it just has that kind of intensity, that kind of black metal influence in it, too.
Yeah.
With like the blast beats and the tremolo sections and stuff.
Sure, yeah. And it definitely has that.
It's not as like mid-paced as like the record last year was, where it had like a lot of space and stuff like that. This one's more just, you know, full on.
A lot of blast beats. Yeah. And it's a really fucking great album. Speaking of albums that might be top albums of the year,
I mean, I think it's in the conversation. I mean, their album last year was in the conversation. It's crazy to see them turn around so fast and do an album. But then
I know
I was looking into like why would this be the case? But this guy is so prolific. Tuomas Sakonen is the main guy.
And Tuomas,
yeah. And by the way, you're the one who introduced me to him a long time ago with Black Sun Aeon.
Loved that album.
And that was the band that he was doing after or simultaneously Before the Dawn.
Right.
And then when all those things folded, he started Wolfheart back in 2013.
Well, he sort of started Wolfheart as a side project.
Yeah, simultaneously, right?
Yeah, and he decided this is the band I want to concentrate on. So he put everything else to rest.
When I was doing – I wrote a review on it recently at themetalpigeon.com, and if you – look at his discography. The only year since 2003 that he hasn't released a studio length album is 2005 and 2014. That's insane.
Yeah.
The guy's so prolific. And then in that year, 2014, he was producing a record. So
what did he produce?
Some band called Rain of Acid, I think. Okay. I've never heard of him, but. But yeah,
is it Rain like REIGN or
just Rain? Regular Rain, yeah.
Well, they missed out then.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it's just like the level of, and he really represents to me that kind of thing that when I listen to like a show like the Josta podcast where he's always talking about touring and financial stuff, I think this only applies. That discussion is really interesting to me, just as a fan and everything. But it only applies to like 2% of the metal world.
Yeah.
Because 98% of metal bands are like Tuomas Sakonen. He's just like a special breed in that realm where it's like what I call a semi-professional or what you can easily call a semi-professional.
We've had this conversation before of modern visionaries and modern legends in the metal field. I would definitely put him in that category now.
Yeah, just someone who is so committed to his art, in that chosen style of metal, melodic metal or whatever, melodic doom metal, death metal, that he just does it. This is his first tour in North America.
Very first.
And it made me, when I was watching them, I was thinking, because a friend of mine who was with me, John, he was asking me afterwards, he's like, I wonder what these guys think of this area, Houston, and I told him, I think this is this band's first time in the United States. I think this might be this guy's first time really touring heavily behind a band, first of all. And he was just thinking, it must be weird to for them to finally, after all these years, come out and do this. And it's like, these guys all have day jobs, you know? Like, he's a gardener, apparently, for his main job. Like, that's what he does. And I don't know, like that semi-professional musician who just releases albums, has a day job, and is just committed to releasing albums. And every once in a while they can tour, like Aeternum, when I saw them open for Orphan Land, they're like,
right. This
is the time we got between our day jobs and our contract gigs to go do this tour. So we had to take it.
Yeah.
That's like 98% of the metal bands out there. And it just, you know.
So let's go back to the show. The most disappointing thing about Wolfheart that evening, they only got to play half an hour. I wish they got to play longer. They deserve to play longer. Maybe even in like another two or three songs that I would have been happy. You know what I mean?
I think that the one thing we can all agree on is that maybe Mors Principium should have opened that show.
I definitely agree on that.
Because I thought it was cool to see them, but they weren't necessarily anywhere near as interesting as Wolfheart Were Alive.
I like Mors Principiumist a lot.
I do.
They did not blow me away live.
No,
at all.
No, Mors makes great records.
Yeah.
Great. If you just want traditional Melodeath in that Gothenburg style,
yep,
that's the band for you. But live, it was a little underwhelming, unfortunately.
They're missing a bass player. They're missing a keyboard player on stage. And who knows what happened there, you know. But
with the exception of Carrick Angren, both of those bands decided to make cuts for their touring situation. So Mors didn't have their bassist, because they do have a regular bassist in the band.
Okay. I'm sure they do.
But they didn't have him, so they piped in the bass through the keyboards. Wolfheart piped in the piped in their keyboards through the keyboards, or through the laptop, rather. That's what I mean. The laptop, not the keyboards.
Yeah.
So, and I'm okay with that, because if that's the only way I get to see that band, then whatever you guys got to do to make it work, you know? But with Moors, I think the problem with Moors is that their front man is very introverted and didn't really have that kind of energy that you need to have a...
He didn't control the audience. When we saw Omni and Gather Him a few weeks before then,
yeah,
he fucking controlled that audience. He was... There was a stage presence. It was there. I mean, I put those two bands in the same sort of vibe together. Yeah. But Omni and Gather Him, 100 times better performance live.
Yeah, because he's a lead vocalist. He's not playing an instrument. So you got to do something more besides what he was doing, which is basically just kind of like a rotation of like six or so stage moves. And it's like, you got to do more if you're not playing an instrument, you know, because you're unencumbered. When we saw Insomnium, you know, they're all playing instruments. And yeah, they're more engaging with the audience than he was.
And so Moors played a longer set, but they... Here's my weird thing about their set. This is like their one of the first tours in America. I'm sure I think they've been here before.
Right.
But they didn't really play like the most popular songs in their repertoire.
Yeah.
They're pulling stuff out that was a little bit more, you know, deep cut. And it's like, dude, I didn't come here to hear all that. I came here to hear the songs that are super popular.
Yeah.
And you sort of have to do that.
It was weird to not hear Wolfheart play anything off the last record.
Yes, that was a disappointment too.
They played two songs off the new one, two songs off the previous two albums,
yep,
and that was it. It's like they
played five songs.
Six songs,
yeah, that's right.
But yeah, it was like... Oh.
You know something else that was disappointing? I bought... it's weird, I'm like, you know, in this in-between size with t-shirts and clothes and stuff like that right now. So usually I buy an extra large shirt, and they're going to be big, but they're still manageable. I bought an extra large Wolfheart shirt, and that thing is fucking huge. It's like a nightshirt on me. I was like,
that's weird.
Maybe I just need to like throw it in the dryer or something.
That's weird, because you probably erred on the side of caution. Like,
yeah,
you buy a size bigger from a European band.
Yes.
Like, where'd you get your merch? Like, oh, Europe? Okay.
Exactly right. Yeah. If I'd known, I would have bought the large, right, and it would probably fit better, you know? But yeah. I don't know. Maybe I should just try to dry it a little bit. Because I bought a Moors Principium EMS shirt, too.
Okay.
Same size, same extra large, and fits fine.
My surreal moment of the... Well, aside from Carrick Angren, which was entirely surreal, but my surreal moment of the night was watching the Rockets-Lakers fight break out on live TV, and the guys from Moors Principium EMS were underneath the TV looking at looking at me, watching the TV above them, going, what is he watching? And they look up. And
while they were playing?
And they see the fight. No, it was after the show.
Oh, really?
They're just like looking at the TV, kind of watching what I'm watching. I wanted to know if it was just baffling to them. Like, what are these? Why is there a fist fight on the basketball court? So it was the Chris Paul, Rajon Rondo fight that just broke out.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it was a big deal for us for like a couple of days in Houston sports. But
What'd you think of the Carrick Angren?
I thought that was one of the most amazing live shows I've ever seen. That just the energy that band had, and the creativity, and the fact that like before they even took the stage, the keyboard started moving by itself.
Yeah,
I kind of look over at everyone. I'm just like, is everyone seeing the same thing I'm seeing? And that guy, I forgot the front man's name, Dennis something something. Energy of like he just went the way he moves on stage. First of all, the venue had a perfect setup for him because they. This venue has this natural riser at the front of the stage, like at the lip of the stage.
Right.
So the singer can jump on top of it and be elevated above the crowd a lot more. He made use of that so much.
So did Wolfheart.
Yeah. He would jump on it and then just move across back and forth, and he skittered. His movements, I can only describe them like a cockroach. He just moved like in this kind of jittery, skittery way that like really unsettled me, like standing there watching.
They definitely have a stage presence, and they have their whole, I don't want to call it a shtick, but it's a shtick.
It is. Yeah, it's a shtick. I mean, if you've seen any of their music videos.
Yeah.
What wasn't really impressive was the keyboardist's commitment to his act the entire show. He was acting like a marionette, like his movements were like jerky, like he's being pulled with strings. And he did that for the entire show. Even in between songs, he never let it drop.
So seeing this band in a venue like that, if you think about it, it's sort of like seeing Cradle of Filth or Dimmu Borgir in a small club when they're first touring the states. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It was definitely, you get that vibe that these guys are going to get bigger because yeah. their shtick, they're based on like horror movie type stuff. Like B horror movies is right. like their main like
inspiration. Yeah.
Yeah. Their thesis, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
But, they're great, but we had to leave a little early because of other things.
Right.
But we saw, I think maybe more than half their set.
Yeah. We stuck around throughout it just cause I couldn't tear myself away from just watching that performance. It was so good. And their songs are really good. They have unique, really interesting parts. The band that you can compare them to directly is Cradle of Filth. Oh, yeah. They are like the second coming of Cradle of Filth. And they're bringing that kind of theatricality that Cradle kind of lacks these days in terms of their live show. It's more just a typical... Remember back in the day in the early 2000s when every time Cradle of Filth would tour, they'd have like contortionists and they'd bring like all sorts of weird stuff on. Now it's just them basically as a band. Carrick Angren is a band that I believe if they got bigger, they would bring all sorts of weird stuff on stage with them. They had a mannequin on stage that we were all we're all noticing the mannequin throughout the set. And at one point he takes this knife, which I'm actually now convinced was a real knife because it didn't bend or anything like that. And he went over to the thing, very in the middle of a song and just started stabbing this mannequin and blood starts gushing out of it, just spraying everywhere. And he like leans his mouth towards it, starts sucking up some of the blood, walks up to the front of the stage and spits it all over us. And I was like finding flecks of like that blood on me like later going, oh geez, you know? So it was an intense experience. Yeah.
I missed that part of it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Wow. I want to talk about the next band we're going to play. I discovered them through that drummer guy who posted about him a couple weeks ago on his Facebook page. And it's a band called Wills Dissolve, right? Now, I hadn't really heard about these guys before. But he said, if you're a fan of Opeth and progressive death metal, you need to check these guys out. So I clicked play, started listening to it. Come to find out, these guys are from Houston. They're a local Houston band.
That's crazy.
They're on Bandcamp, and I wholeheartedly recommend go give them $5, download this EP. It's five songs, and the shortest song is like 8 minutes, which we're going to play. Most of them are like 10, 12, 13-minute songs. Epic, progressive, fucking death metal. So you could throw, Opeth into the mix. I do hear some like November's Doom, some Enslaved.
Yeah, it's like a blend of things.
Yeah.
Because I've heard bands that have tried to like mimic Opeth almost exactly.
I hear some Swallow the Sun in it.
Yeah, but these guys are doing something more.
And there's so many parts and really catchiness to the way their song structure is. I'm addicted to these guys, and I can't believe they're local, and I need to get them on the show. We need to do an interview with these guys, and I want to see them live for sure.
I'm almost certain that they're in some band that we've also heard of before, that because the Houston metal scene is pretty insular at some point. So
there's got to be.
I'm sure we've run into them before at some point.
So the name of the album is called The Heavens Are Not on Fire. The song we're going to play is So Do Not Mistake These Ashes.
Very At the Gatesian.
Yeah, right.
Titles.
The band, of course, is called Wills Dissolve. Check it out, get into it, and we'll be back after these next couple songs. We'll be right back.
On we go. On we go. On we go. To the standing stones we made. On we go. To the standing stones. On we go. To the standing stones we made. On we go. To the standing stones we get to raise.
Welcome back, MSR Cast 213. I'm going to have real problems pronouncing this. Not the band name, but the song you just heard was, okay, Via Canadensis, off the new album Great Brunswick Forest. That's Thras and Blatt, a band that, that you and I both love.
Yes.
And not
right, they rose from the ashes of
Woods of Ypres.
Woods of Ypres.
And I mean, you know, kind of starting almost at the same time with David Gold, because he helped found them, but it was, they kind of put it on ice until, because there was a lot of Woods of Ypres activity going on. And then now, of course, after everything happened, Joel Violette decided to resurrect it and go, full steam ahead with
and,
it.
And Ray Amate is still in the band, right?
From Immortal Bird, she's on drums. It's really just him and her at this point. The bassist they had on the last record, Metaconia, he wasn't on this new album. I don't know if that means he's out, not in the band anymore. They never really made an announcement on that. But this is a weird album. It's all acoustic, and it's not what you would think. And obviously, if you're thinking about that song you just heard, that's more or less the general way this acoustic album is approached. It's very upbeat.
It's very comparable to when Bortnagar did a stripped-down acoustic-style album.
Yeah, but more straightforward, like not as avant-garde.
Right,
and
right.
Very straightforward, almost. But it's like...
But don't get us wrong when we say acoustic. It's not just a couple acoustic guitars. It's more than that.
I mean, Ray Amate is like the secret weapon in this album, because her drumming, you know, it's like... I'd be interested to read about how they recorded this, especially her drums, because... You can tell there's some distance between her drums and the microphones. There's a lot of ambiance there in that recording. She plays aggressive on this record, and there are songs and there are moments on this throughout this album where she's doing like something approximating like an acoustic blast beat on percussion, and it's like noticeable, and it's like, wow, this is interesting. Like there's a song in the middle of the record that I really like, because it goes into this instrumental section where he's doing almost like a tremolo riffing on the acoustic guitar, and she's just going full bore on blast beats and stuff. And you're just like, whoa, this is different for an acoustic record, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like acoustic in that kind of Opeth Damnation sense. It's very much a propelling, up-tempo, energy-filled record. And the first time I heard it, I was just like, what are they doing? And then I just kept on sticking with it, and it didn't take that long. It took a couple listens after, I was just like, okay, I get it now. This is freaking awesome. And it's, again, one of those albums that's making me rethink all my top 10 and everything. So it's...
I definitely need to revisit a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, it's not... I mean, it's so weird. This band's doing such different things. On their first album, they did a mix of, like, some folky, mournful ballads with, you know, very kind of black metal, basic, you know... But nothing they do is basic. It's always filtered through that Canada lens. And what this album made me do when I was reading interviews with him about the inspiration for the album, he really talked a lot about like these Canadian, Northeastern Canadian folk music artists and stuff. And I started listening to all that stuff, like the Stan Rogers or whatever, and trying to figure out where his inspiration comes from. And it's definitely a Canadian record. It's like, not only the song that you heard where he's referencing a highway in Canada that's like apparently like a very big national thing over there, but the tone of folk music that he uses as the inspiration is very much a maritime Canadian type of folk music. And
gotcha.
It's like folk metal that's not really quite European folk metal, but similar in some way.
But still from a desolate, cold place.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and you can hear, like, on this song, I think, was the most Woods of Ypres-ish song.
Yeah.
Like, I could hear this being, like a song that got left on the cutting room floor for Woods of Ypres 5 because it wasn't, like, heavy enough. You know, like, even though there's an electric guitar sneaking in the distance in the song a little bit. But, I mean, they're doing such interesting things, and I think it's such a cool band, and I like the fact that he's trying. He's not afraid to try all these different things, no matter if, you know, if he risks him falling on his face, basically.
When we did back in the day, right after David Gold passed away, we did a tribute episode, and I reached out to people in the field and, you know, musicians and things like that. And Joel and Ray were both kind enough to record a piece, audio piece, to play on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember how cool that was for them, and it was right after it happened, you know.
Yeah.
So I've always really supported those guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Straws and Bladder, they're great, phenomenal band.
I bought this from their Bandcamp. You can get it from their Bandcamp, but it's also I forgot what label they're on, but it's actually like they're doing really cool like physical copies of it, I think. But I just got it through digital.
Speaking of
a band worth supporting.
Speaking of a band worth supporting, buying digitally or physically on Bandcamp, band we just played before that.
Yeah.
Look at that segue. That was amazing.
Yeah.
Wills Dissolve. It's Wills Dissolve with a .bandcamp.com. Let me double check on that.
And, you know, hearing from bands talk about, like, how Bandcamp does, like, a sale on Bandcamp really helps them out a lot, like, compared to, you know, other means and stuff.
Right.
I really do like pulling the trigger on Bandcamp a lot more, and it's, like, you know. Yep.
WillsDissolve.Bandcamp is their address. It's $5 for the digital album.
It's not bad.
Totally worth it.
Yeah.
I just bought my copy during the last break, and... You know, we're sharing a little bit with you, but if there's another band out there that you want us to know about that's like this, you know, unsigned and, you know, you think deserve some airtime,
mm-hmm.
Let us know. MSRcast@gmail.com. Reach out to us on Twitter @MSRcast or your Twitter as well.
Yep.
Which is?
The Metal Pigeon.
Yeah. So we want to hear from you guys. We want more interaction. We want to know. If there's a band from your hometown, your area, that we don't know about and you want the world to know about, let's hear about it. Let's play them. Let's do more of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Wills Dissolve. Phenomenal, phenomenal fucking band. Way more... What's the word I'm looking for? Mature, that's the word I'm looking for. Than I was really expecting out of a... Not saying my... trying to say anything bad, but out of a local band, it sounds like they've been around for a long time.
I totally get it.
Yeah.
Look, not to say anything bad about local bands.
Exactly,
but
we're not.
I'm going to say something bad about local bands. Sometimes they just don't try that hard, and that's why they're a local band. But you know, when you see the difference, okay, Oceans of Slumber to you and me are a local band, but they're known around the world now,
right?
Because they fucking tried and they put. Like real effort into their art and real commitment.
Dauber has a black metal band coming out. Their first show is going to be with UADA next month.
Oh yeah, I think I'm going to that show. Free show.
Yep, free show.
Yeah.
UADA's fourth time in Houston this year or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Probably their fourth time.
I haven't seen them yet, so I might go to it if it's free.
Why not? They're cool to see live. Definitely. I mean, you've been to way more local shows than I have, but when I first was getting into the metal scene here in Houston, I would go to every local show I could find.
I did that for a while, yeah.
And
back in the late 90s and early 2000s,
For me, I would say between 2000 and 2005, when I kind of started to get tired of it, I was just there a lot. And what I started to realize was that a lot of these guys just didn't really... They only cared about impressing the small group that would go to their shows, and that was it. They didn't really care about making an impact beyond. And sometimes you just got to go like, well, what do you, I mean, it's cool if you just want to have fun, but if you want to be like, put something out there in the world that everyone, you know, it's like art, you're putting art out. You have to put some time and effort and commitment and money and stuff like, and that's what I hear in this band.
Yeah.
Yeah,
definitely. We're cashing in on the ground floor here. So we're with them as they're going to grow.
This is their first album, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I can't recommend this band more than I can. So check out Will's Dissolve on their all the social media, Facebook, Twitter. Buy the album on Bandcamp. They have a limited edition digipack version that comes signed by the band too for like $10.
Cool,
yeah. Not bad. So we're going to get into a cover song next.
Mm-hmm.
I've been into a little bit of a Queen kick since I saw the movie.
You're not the first person who's told me that.
We saw Bohemian Rhapsody. This is not going to be a full review of the movie or anything like that, but I really enjoyed the movie. It was a good biopic, however you want to say it. Of course, there was definitely things they changed to make it more Hollywoodized and, you know, but it wasn't just a Freddie Mercury.
Like Brian May saying, we've got to be more experimental or something, right?
Yeah.
Which I'm sure he never said, just so lame.
He was a producer, so he could, I don't know. It's not just a Freddie Mercury biopic. It's not only about him. It is about the band. There's a couple things that they change. Like in the movie, it's like, oh, hey, I saw you guys perform tonight. Oh, we just lost our singer. I'll be your singer. That didn't fucking happen that way. He was living with the guys already.
Right.
When their singer quit. And that, there's a bunch of different things. And
boy, they really love to do that kind of rock star, you know, Mark Wahlberg type bullshit, don't they?
Time frames are a little bit off and things like that. But it's a phenomenal movie. We saw it in the Dolby Theater. So, not to spoil anything, the end of the movie is almost a 20-minute recreation of their Live Aid concert. And when they're playing that live concert, you could feel in the seat, you could feel those kick drums kicking. And it was almost like a massage. It was pretty great.
That's cool. Yeah.
It's really, the first time you see it, definitely recommend it. If you have a Dolby theater, go watch it in Dolby. This is a movie designed for that. My biggest complaint about Dolby theaters is sometimes the background, the sound is a little bit louder than the vocals, than the dialogue. So sometimes it's hard to hear things.
Right.
And that's not just with this movie. I've noticed it was other movies in that format as well. But
yeah,
this one's definitely worth seeing in Dolby surround digital.
I think
theater.
I remember Interstellar in that format.
Maybe.
That was a rough one.
I bet.
Like the most important piece of dialogue in the entire movie, you can barely hear it. Like, wait. So wait, what happened?
Right. Can I turn on
Did they in the Live Aid thing?
Yeah.
Because I watched that show, the actual on YouTube and everything. I watch it like maybe like once every year just because it's such a spectacular show.
Right.
And display of him as a front man. The thing that's always intriguing me about that show is that there's this roadie on the stage. Like in the 80s and the 90s, roadies were just kind of – stagehands would just kind of be on the stage apparently, right, especially at these festivals.
Are you talking about the guy that are hanging on the rafters?
Well, there's this one guy in particular, and you can see him very clearly if you go on YouTube and you watch the Live Aid
set. We just did recently too.
It's during, I think, The Hammer Will Fall, maybe the intro of The Hammer Will Fall. He's just standing there against the stage – side left, or I guess, you know, if you're watching the stage, you'd be stage right.
Yeah.
He's leaning against the side of the stage, and Freddie Mercury is like 4 feet away from him going into this and charging the crowd up. And he's just there in this kind of like white t-shirt, kind of workers jeans. He's got this lanyard on, and he's just kind of like leaning there, like with his arms folded. And he's kind of like looking at Freddie Mercury, and he's looking at the crowd going, yeah, he's pretty good. This guy's pretty good, huh? And he's just like, he's getting into it. But just the casualness of him standing there at this historic moment.
I want to say they did. They recreated almost shot for shot. They didn't. There's one or two songs they didn't play.
Right.
They did Hammer to Fall, like in its entirety, which is great.
I remember at one point he gets his cord tangled up with one of the things, and he like jokes around with the one of the techs who's like trying to help him undo the cord or something.
Don't remember that part.
I've watched that show many times.
We're actually going again tomorrow night with a bunch of friends. So I just watched this week the Live Aid show. So I'm going to do another comparison on that.
Yeah, see if you spot that roadie.
I'm going to look for him now.
He's so noticeable to me. Every time I watch that, I'm just like, this guy, the audacity of this guy.
The joke that I thought that was going to hate the most and actually played really well. So there's an EMI executive in the movie, full bearded guy. He's probably seen him in the trailer, previews. It's Mike Myers.
Mike Myers, yeah.
The line where he says, nobody's ever going to hit, when they're talking about Bohemian Rhapsody, the song, the line he says, nobody's ever going to headbang to this song in a car ever. I was like, really? All right, that's actually pretty funny and it works.
Okay.
But yeah. It's a fun movie.
All right.
Just don't go into it going, oh, this is like a documentary.
Right.
It's a Hollywood styled version of their story, and it works really great.
And not to go on about the movie too long, but just one thing someone pointed out to me is they said, you know what? Because the whole thing about him kind of jumping on as their singer in the plot, like when you do inventions like that, it makes you consider, like, did this story deserve to be told through a movie? You know, like, you think about all the other bands that haven't had major biopics yet in Hollywood, like Led Zeppelin or the Beatles, and they have really interesting mid periods, end periods, starting periods. Like, the Beatles, the end of the Beatles would be an amazing biopic that they haven't done yet. And you just kind of go, why did they do the Queen one first, where they have to sort of invent things about the band? But they haven't done all these other stories that are just waiting to be told. The books have already been written. They can easily license the stories from the books. I don't get it. You know, like Hammer of the Gods, license that book. It's an amazing, epic rock
biography. Did you know the Beatles, John Lennon, signed the paperwork that disbanded the Beatles at a Disney World hotel?
And I did not know that. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it was a Polynesian hotel.
You know, I've been to that hotel.
It was either Polynesian or the Contemporary. I'd have to double check my facts, but
the Polynesian is exactly what it sounds like.
Right? I love that hotel. It's a great hotel. One of my favorite restaurants in the world is in that hotel.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ohana. Oh, yeah. So good. Tangent, going way off. So we decided to play a Queen song, but we couldn't. I wanted to play something that was a metal band covering Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose Testament Dragon Attack from their Dark Roots of Earth album, the deluxe version. But you had an idea for a song too, which is really good. The Blind Guardian.
Spread Your Wings.
Spread Your Wings. Yeah. That's a great cover too.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're going to go with the Testament, but
yeah.
Go check out the Blind Guardian Spread Your Wings song.
Hanzi Kirsch's
Imaginations from the Other Side, right?
This was a bonus track on the Japanese edition of Somewhere Far Beyond.
Somewhere Far, okay.
And it ended up on their B-side collection, Forgotten Tales, like in 96. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, let's check out Dragon Attack from Testament. All right.
Oh, do the right. Showtime. Put it on my back. Showdown. Another customer. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We just had a visit from Madam Satan. this is from the new album Shadow Work, posthumously released from Worldane. Really fucking great album. It really is Nevermore.
Yeah.
It totally is. So he was working with his band out in Brazil when he unfortunately passed away. And they finished the album and now they're releasing it. It just came out a couple weeks ago. We're actually waiting on a vinyl version we pre-ordered it, waiting for that to come in.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Cause it has like a huge book and everything. If you go to their YouTube page, for Rural, you can actually watch a documentary about the making of the album.
Hmm.
It's really well done. And it's like maybe a 10-15 minute documentary. Interviews with the band how they finished it and a lot of shots of them with Rural in the studio and stuff like that. Really, it's really cool. But yeah, unfortunately, you know, he was taken from us way too soon. If he had more albums like this, it's a great fucking album so far.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I can really say about Shadow Work, but if you're a fan of his vocals, you're a fan of Nevermore, you're a fan of, you know, heavy, progressive, thrashy stuff, check it out, please.
Yeah. I mean, there's no one else in metal that I've ever heard sound like him.
No.
Really unique voice.
People try.
Yeah.
People get close.
Yeah. But not.
But no cigar.
It's uncanny, his voice.
Yeah. So you want to talk about the other concert we were at?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, this was a big one on the Behemoth tour.
Yeah.
Their Houston stop. It was a Behemoth at the Gates, Wolves in the Throne Room.
Yes.
Yes. Really interesting show. Like
interesting lineup.
Interesting lineup because every band was very different and stuff. It was they played at the House of Blues in Houston. And
not my favorite venue.
No, definitely not my favorite venue. Nothing against the venue itself, but it's just not my favorite venue for the type of music that I listen to. You know, when I first saw At the Gates was in 2008, I think, on the reunion tour or whatever.
This is my first time seeing them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I saw them then, and they were playing in the small room of Warehouse Live, and it just felt appropriate. And just dirty metal show. Everyone was pitting. It was great. And this time, you know, this crowd was definitely a Behemoth crowd. They were there for Behemoth. They went nuts for Behemoth. And I don't think half of them really understood what At the Gates was about or maybe even cared or whatever. But, I mean, that's fine. It's just it felt like some of those songs where I was going, yes, you know, Blinded by Fear is sailing right over people's heads. So that was like a critique of the crowd. And then that's part of my critique of the venue is that when you have these big metal shows like this sometimes in these bigger, more mainstreamy Live Nation venues, you get a crowd that's not really the usual crowd that goes to your metal show in the smaller venues and knows the etiquette and knows the sort of, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. I got you.
But, I mean, just as far as the show goes, I thought Wolves in the Throne Room were really interesting. You know, the friends we were with, they didn't really think much of them, but I thought they were cool because they had like a real ritualistic presentation on stage, burning sage in between songs, and they had these cool like stage props, like very ancient, could be in Skyrim like looking decor and stuff. It was really cool.
Very paganistic looking design.
Very pagan, yeah. And the burning of the sage was cool, and the keyboardist also had this moment where she did this like big kind of like not a timpani but kind of a bone timpani type thing, percussion.
I remember that.
You know, like a boom boom, you know.
They had a good stage presence. I mean, I would definitely like to see them do a headlining set.
Yeah, I think they'd be cool to see them in a more intimate venue where they could probably control everything a little bit better. But what they did was really great.
You know? But I think the environment of the House of Blues sort of fits their style a little bit, because the House of Blues, it's a little eclectic, a little weird and wonky, and you know what I mean?
Yeah. I thought they were interesting. I mean, sometimes I would get a little bored in their more meandering moments.
Yeah, they did meander a little
bit. But I sort of feel that way when I listen to their music, too. I'm like, oh, some of this is good, and then some of this I get distracted on and stuff. But, yeah,
They played three songs, like a half an hour set.
I couldn't even tell. The songs kind of bled into each other, but it was cool to see them finally.
Then at the gates.
Yeah, I mean,
my first time seeing them.
What'd you think?
Can I be honest?
Yeah.
It wasn't the right, like you said, it wasn't the right environment for me to see in the first time, I guess. I don't know, there was something a little off with their sound. I don't know what it was.
It weren't as loud as I remember them being.
Maybe that was it. The drummer was really loud, but the rest of the band was not. I got to meet Tomas Lindberg later when he was hanging out by the merch booth. He was really nice.
Yeah.
And a lot of the songs, I'm not really super familiar with the last two albums yet.
Right.
But even stuff, you know, like Slaughter of the Soul and that kind of stuff, it just didn't have the punch I was expecting it to have.
I remember that show when I first saw them on that reunion, just the excitement about that band. There was such this mysticism about this band, like this aura around them. And when they came on stage, that energy in that room was just palpable and you can feel it. And I remember just, you know, just going crazy headbanging throughout that show. And it was one of the few metal shows I've been to where there was actually a fight that broke out. I remember.
No, really?
Where this big guy who was in the metal scene a long time ago, and I haven't seen him in years, but we used to call him Arm Breaker Rule Maker. Well, this is one of the shows where he earned the Rule Maker thing because he grabbed these two guys that were fighting for some stupid reason. Someone mistakenly bumped into someone's girlfriend or something. He grabbed these two guys, and I was right next to the incident when it happened. He shouted at them, "No fighting in the scene!" And he grabbed them and he threw them out. Like, grabbed this guy, an Arm Breaker, because he broke my friend's arm, Matt Roy's arm.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, during a Fintroll show at the Meridian. And, like, well, dislocated it. So he had to, like, and Matt Roy goes over the side of the room, goes into one of those couch cushions and popped his arm back into place. Yeah.
Ow.
Grizzly. And then later he gets drunk and we're all hanging out with Fintroll in the parking lot. So weird times. But this guy was like a fixture of the metal scene like back then. And he would just be at every show. And you could see him from a mile away because he towered over everyone and was a big guy and a tall guy at that. So he looked like he was like a football linebacker or something. Anyway. Yeah, I didn't feel that energy at this at the gates performance from the crowd. I blame the crowd more than the band.
I can see that.
You know, I just think that a lot of it was just going over their heads. So,
because I'm like, they're playing Slaughter of the Soul. They're playing fucking Blinded by Fear. I'm like, this is fucking awesome. And everybody's like, hey.
And there was a pit going for some of that stuff. But this was definitely a behemoth crowd. Understandably.
Right. Yeah. Let's talk about behemoths.
Okay. I mean, I thought they were really great. I thought that Nurgle is a great, excellent stage presence. Weirdly enough, I thought that their set was great up until they hit the encore. Like, I actually thought that the song that they ended with before the encore, and it's escaped me what the song is called, but it was like one of their more older kind of black metal-y cuts.
Right.
I thought that was like the perfect closer. I thought that was like where they hit their peak. And when they came back out, like from, you know, they go off stage, there's the encore moment, and they come back on, the songs they played during the encore were not their most popular songs. They were really kind of plodding and meandering, and they just kind of sucked the energy out of their set, and then all of a sudden they were gone. And I kind of figured they would end on "Oh Father, Oh Satan, Oh Son,"
yeah,
and they didn't. And I was just like really surprised. It was just, oh, it's over. It was one of those moments where it's like the house lights go up, and you're kind of like, oh, it's over.
Yep.
And I think everyone in the crowd kind of felt like, what? So that was a weird moment because I thought they were doing pretty well up until the encore. I think they should have maybe shortened their set a little bit, actually. But really? I mean, cool stage presence. I mean, everyone in the band is entertaining to watch. They are all great performers, all great vocalists, great showmen. It's not just the Nurgle show up there. I mean, you know, that is a really great live band to see.
Which is so interesting you say that because Behemoth is Nurgle's band.
Right.
It's his baby, his vision, his. But you are so right. These aren't just nameless ghouls,
right,
or nameless ghosts or whatever you want to call them that are just performing his songs. they're part of the performance, they're part of the band.
They have lead vocal lines.
Yeah, and it's so cool to see that.
Yeah, it makes it more interesting to watch. You know, my criticism of Satyricon is that it's really your only people you're watching is Satyr and Frost.
Yeah.
Because everyone else in the band is basically a hired gun because it's a two-person band. And what they – as a hired gun on stage, they're very just like, I'm going to keep in my place and just play. And not, and like, I'll move like a little bit headbang this way, this, that. And I'm not going to do anything to draw attention to myself because Satyr is the star.
My boss is right there.
Right. And what you get with Behemoth is the opposite of that. Everyone was taking the spotlight. Nurgle was happy to kind of move in the back and let the other guys take the spotlight and the lead vocal role and stuff. And I thought that was interesting. I didn't expect that. So, and maybe that shows my ignorance of the band. Maybe this is what they always do. But it was a surprise, a nice surprise for me. So.
I'll be honest, I've really gotten into Behemoth more since this new album came out.
Yeah, I think it's their best album they've done. I know everyone thinks like the Satanist is the best now, but I actually think this one's better just because it's more experimental in a weird way, you know?
It's more, I think we talked about it before, it's a little bit accessible.
Yeah.
More accessible to a new listener.
Yeah.
And that's not saying Satanist is not like that too, but I've speaking of albums that could be top contenders.
Yeah, I don't know.
There's a lot.
I just don't mean, you know, and not saying that it's not deserving of it, because The Satanist was a top 10 album for me that year in 2014, but this one is running against a lot of competition, so.
Yeah, I need to revisit my list and see where everything really does stack up,
because
we're almost to the end of the year, so we don't have a lot left.
Yeah.
Speaking of, let's talk about this band next. Die Nasty.
Well, it's Dynasty.
No, it's Die Nasty.
With a Z.
Oh, okay.
Instead of the, you know, the S. The singer of this band is Niles Mullen, and interestingly enough, this album came out in, like, late September, and then...
From Frasier?
No. Yeah. Niles Crane.
Yeah.
Niles Mullen's a vocalist for Dynasty, and this is a band from the Netherlands, right? Yeah, the Netherlands. And he has just been, for the past two years, the replacement vocalist in Amaranth for the Queen male vocalist.
Oh, really?
And I'm sparing everyone playing the Amaranth new album because I'm totally out on it right now. I don't like it. He's their new vocalist, and this is their first album just came out with him on the Queen vocalist role in October, 2 weeks after this album came out.
Oh.
So he's in both bands. They somehow had their labels okay the fact that both of these albums would come out at the same time.
Right.
So it gives like a fan, just like an outside observer, a real chance to gauge his performance in one band versus the other. And Amaranth made the wrong choice hiring him as their lead vocalist or their co-lead vocalist alongside Louise Reed, because he's a good vocalist, and this album proves it. In this he fits perfectly in this band in Dynasty. This is his band, obviously. This is what he's made to do, soaring, like, melodic modern power metal, and he's a gifted vocalist at that, and they're wasting his talent in Amaranth because they're forcing him to do this kind of pop stuff that and lyrics that don't make sense, because Amaranth lyrics really hardly ever make sense. And I just don't think that he understands how to, or he can even fathom how to approach the lyrics he's been asked to sing in Amaranth. The new album is a mess.
Really?
And it's a complete
mess. You like
mess.
Them. I never really liked them. So
I thought that they hit their peak on Massive Addictive in 2014, 15. With Jake, and the thing with Jake, his name is Joachim Lundberg, and he's the lead singer of Kyra, which is the band he's doing with X in Flames guitarist Jesper Strombold now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I like that. And remember, you hated that song, but I love that record that we played, or the from the song, the album that year. Was it like last year, I think? And that what that record kind of proved to me was that he really was a lot of that behind the scenes songwriting talent that made those Amaranth's choruses tick so well and made those vocal melodies so damn catchy, because they're lacking a lot of that in the new album. And unfortunately, Niles Mullen is kind of going to be the, I don't know, like the emblem of that for like why new Amaranth is kind of like weird and off kilter. His voice doesn't match it tonally. He doesn't really know how to approach these lyrics, and And I want to play this because I think that it's he's such a good talent. He's such a great talent, and this band's so good, and this album's so good. And it's like, this is what you should be doing. Niles, quit Amaranth and go do this full time. You know, I know Amaranth is probably a good paycheck, but this is definitely him doing what he's meant to be doing. So, no criticism of him himself, just of his situation.
Oh, Niles.
Yeah. Oh, Niles.
So let's get into Dynasty.
Sure.
I'm never going to not say that. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. The album's called Fire Sign.
Uh-huh.
How would you describe this band?
Very modern, kind of uplifting power metal, but modern production, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, let's check out Dynasty, and this is a song called Follow Me. Hey, I said it right.
Yeah.
You didn't even notice.
I noticed.
Petrol in the
I don't know what to say about that. Gamma Bomb, 6616.
Yeah.
And yeah.
The music, it's too bad we're just an audio podcast because the music video really needs to be seen.
It does.
And I've seen some really creative music, you know, like metal music videos that are on the comedy side. This might be the best.
They're great.
Be the best.
We watched like two or three videos earlier.
Yeah.
I've always liked Gamma Bomb. They've always had a comedic aspect to them, not taking themselves too seriously.
Right.
Italian thrash metal. They're, you know, that retro style.
I wouldn't have guessed Italian.
Yeah. Their vocalist reminds me of Jello Biafra so much. And if you know who that is and you recognize what I just said there, you'll definitely agree.
Yeah.
I saw them. They opened up for Forbidden and Evile, and I think the other band was Bonded by Blood.
Huh.
So that was a really good thrash tour.
When I saw the cover for this album, I recognized
I'm sorry, they're not Italian. They're Irish.
Irish. Okay, that makes
Ireland,
more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got it wrong. I'm sorry.
When I saw the album cover for this record, I had remembered seeing it on a couple blogs and stuff that were like higher profile blogs.
Yeah.
Maybe think they're maybe picking up steam a little bit finally.
I think they are.
Yeah. Very iconic looking cover, or it could be like one of those covers. It's very iconic. Looks like the cover to some 80s movie or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Running Man. No.
The album's called Speed Between the Lines.
Yeah.
And in the album cover, it's like a digital version of this guy running with
yeah.
red line, very 80s looking.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
Put a Scorpions logo on there and you got something right there.
Yeah.
Great band. They were fun live. The singer was really nice when I met him. I've always had always liked this band a lot.
Yeah.
I think this album's going to get them the recognition. So hopefully they can tour again and then, you know, get on bigger and better shows and yeah. I think they're finally speeding towards something.
You said it.
What? Speed Between the Lines? What? No. So what did we hear before Gamma Bomb? Was it Dynasty?
Yeah, Dynasty.
See?
Yeah, I mean, what did you think of that song?
It's more AOR than I thought it was going
yeah.
to be.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's fun.
Very much, yeah.
I don't know how often I'll go back and listen to it.
Yeah. I mean, the entire record is very much in that same vein. They don't really do anything like beyond what they feel like they're good at, which is sometimes appreciable. Like you can kind of go, hey, I just want to listen to that kind of record right now. You know, something easy and catchy and instantly delicious, you know, so.
I'll take the new Brainstorm for that.
Well, yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But not to spoil anything. But
yeah. Yeah. I'm sure we'll be talking about the new Brainstorm albums again soon enough. We know we played it last time. But.
Yeah, we did. So something I wanted to talk about. I picked up we have another show, our sister show called Metal Geeks, mm-hmm. where we talk about video games and comic books and movies and stuff like that. I want to talk about this comic book I picked up this week. A friend of mine who works at one of our local comic shops, he's like, dude, I have something for you. You need to get it. They were sold out at their location. He's like, all right. Let me tell you about it. You're going to have to get it. He showed me what the cover looked like. He's like, I'm going to have your store, your location, put one on hold for you. And when they go pick it up, the guy at the store, I was like, oh, yeah, the other dude from the other store put it in my box and told me that I need to buy this. He's like, oh, yeah, this is definitely a you thing. You need to buy this. I was like, okay. The comic is called Murder Falcon. It's done by a writer-artist. His name is Daniel Warren Johnson. He does another comic out there called Extremity, which is pretty good. He's actually been a Comic Palooza guest before, but the premise of this series, it's this guitar player, really badass guitar player, is really down on his luck. His band is broken up and he doesn't want to play guitar anymore. This Murder Falcon shows up to help. And there's like these huge fucking like crab like demon monster things yeah. and the only thing that can defeat these monsters is if he plays his guitar which powers the Falcon, the Murder Falcon, to kill him.
Yeah. I'm presuming the Murder Falcon and the crab monsters come through the same tear in the world.
Probably
in some other dimension or whatever.
Yes,
yeah.
They're at the very last bit of this issue, there's something about a tear in the universe.
Yeah. Yeah.
the cover that I got, it's an homage to Painkiller from Judith Priest. The logo is in the same way. Pretty awesome. And my buddy at the store showed me the second issue, which is coming out in November.
Yeah.
It's a fucking recreation of Power Slave.
That's awesome.
I'm like, all right, I'm into this.
Well, the great thing about this cover is that the Murder Falcon is the motor, is on the motor, is the motorcycle.
He's the motorcycle from the album cover. Yeah. It's fucking great. And it's a fun story too.
Yeah,
you know?
It was cool. Yeah.
I definitely recommend. Apparently the first issue is already in going to reprint.
Nice.
So it's done through Image Comics and Skybound. So definitely go search out, go to your local comic book store, find the first issue of Murder Falcon. If you can find the Judas Priest Painkiller version, cover version, get that one.
Yeah.
It's a fun comic. If you're into metal, you're into fantasy. He drives around like a 1970s, like fantasy van with like shit painted on the side.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
It got it. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of something like, a cool video game can come out of this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like, remember Brutal Legend?
I think so. Brutal Legend.
It had Jack Black as the main character.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
The soundtrack was like 100 songs long. It had like all these different metal bands and shit.
Yeah.
Pretty great. Yeah, I wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
That's fun.
The Metal Geek Minute.
This is brought to you by Metal Geeks. So what do we have next?
Norwegian Viking metal band. I mean, if you could call any band a Viking metal band, it's this band, Einherjer.
Yep.
Which I know I'm probably butchering that pronunciation, but that's how I've always said it. I've actually been a fan of this band for a long time, but this is, again, one of those bands where you just can't really explain why you stopped listening to them or fell off paying attention to them.
Right.
It just happened. So it's been a long time since I've actually heard a new album by them. I think I'm coming back in at the right time, though, because I've heard the three singles they've released from this one. It's coming out tomorrow. We're recording this on Thursday. It's coming out tomorrow on the 9th. And you're going to be able to get it through their Bandcamp, as well as, I think, they're releasing a physical through some label or something. But they have a real warm, organic sound on this record that it surprised me. I'm sure that maybe in their past couple records, they've probably been doing the same thing. But this is my point of entry again right now. I used to listen to them back close to a decade ago. And like when I was really into like getting into like, Tear and stuff like
97,
that.
97, 98.
They've been around for a long time. And I just remember, really liking them and went back when this stuff was like really fresh and new and stuff. And I think, for me, maybe it was just my feelings towards it being oversaturated and kind of putting me off just listening to all this stuff in general. But this is a really cool song. It's really just straight to the point. It has a real rawness from what I remember of their sound that I was just caught off guard with. So it's called the song we're going to play is Mein Vapen, Mein Ord. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that. But the album's coming out tomorrow. It's called Norrøn Spor. Don't know what that means. I'm sure it's something awesome.
You and Einherjer means in.
I think I do. It's like weapon something, right?
In Norse mythology, the Einherjer are those who have died in battle and are brought back.
Oh, okay.
No, that's pretty fucking metal.
That's metal, yeah.
Speaking of that type of stuff, I picked up Diablo 3.
Oh yeah,
for the Switch, and I've been playing that during my lunch break at work.
Yeah.
Nothing better than just playing some Diablo 3 on handheld.
I used to love Diablo 2. Really into that.
So what I do is, like, it's weird. I put on Spotify, and I put on this, you know, they make the channels for you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's bands like this. It's Bortnagar and Einherjer and all these style bands. It's picking right for me. I have that on my headphones while I'm playing the game.
Nice.
It works really fucking well. Yeah. It's great. But, the album is called, what is it called again? I'm not going to say it.
Norrøn Spor, I guess.
There you go.
This O with the strike through it, I don't know how to pronounce that.
No.
Sorry, guys.
We watched a video earlier, too. I wasn't super impressed by the video.
I just thought it was cool because it was like, they clearly had like a $200 budget and they made the most of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I can see what they're going for. They're trying to get some beautiful, beautiful shots. Their focus was way fucking shallow. I don't think they were using a really nice camera. You can definitely tell.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah.
So if they had a really good camera, you could have got the same shot and they would have looked beautiful.
But, you know, speaking of Wolfheart earlier in the episode, did you see the video they put out for that, the single off the album? It's like the second track on the album.
Yeah.
Breakwater. They filmed in Iceland.
Yeah.
That is a beautiful video.
Yes, that's what I was hoping for this, you know?
Whoa, that was a great
video.
In
the Ironheart, you can see like a cruise ship in the background too.
Yeah,
so it took you out of it. You're like, oh, whoa.
But you know what's funny is that they focused on the cruise ship. Like, you can see it go in focus. So they
maybe
left
it was
in there.
A 70,000 tons cruise ship.
Yeah, I think they left it in there for a reason.
Must have. All right, so let's get into it. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Welcome back from the battlefields of Asura. That was Thonic with the Crimson Skies Command.
How do you say that?
Thonic.
Not Katonic?
I've always heard people say Thonic. And the I assume C-H-A. They know. I assume they know more than I do.
So the CH is silent?
Yeah. Like it's, yeah.
Hmm. All right.
So this is their first album in, I think, like 5 years. I think the last one was in 2013. And this one just came out quietly, you know, a couple weeks ago. I say quietly because it just doesn't seem like a lot of people have been talking about it. But they're a big deal in different parts of the world. And they're from Taiwan. And, I mean, they used to call them like the Black Sabbath of Asia, basically. I mean, that they're that big over there. And my first memory of Thonic, of really getting into him, was around 2008 when I saw Satyricon on their tour for Age of Nero record. And Thonic was opening for them on that tour. And I remember just being really surprised that before Thonic took the stage, there was this crowd of people in the back of the venue. It was the small room at Warehouse Live. Bunch of like kind of really nicely dressed up, and people in suits and people in nice clothes and stuff. Not a metal crowd, of just a lot of Taiwanese people were back there in the back of the room, and we're all up in the front, and like the metal fans and everything. I'm looking back at these guys, and they're just there sitting on the seats they had in the back, like very politely, like waiting. And Thonic took the stage, and they're just sitting back there, like watching his performance. And it was just the weirdest thing, because it was about 40 or 50 people, like Taiwanese people back there, just like clearly not, this is their first time at a metal show. They don't know what's going on, but they're here to see these superstars in this small club who are like a big deal back in Taiwan. And
I can imagine. Yeah.
And I remember after when we left the venue after Satyricon and everything, they were all out there by the bus, like meeting Thonic, a huge crowd around Thonic, just like taking pictures with them, you know, autographs, all the whole thing. And I just always stuck with me. And, you know, Freddie Lim is now, he's the vocalist. He's a legislator over there. He's in their Congress, basically.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like he political party, the New Power Party in Taiwan, very pro Taiwanese independence, very, outspoken, very. This is a very political band, and if you ever see any of their music videos, even the new music video for the single off this album, it's got some very, like, I don't know what's going on in the video, because it's all in different, you know, characters that I can't read, like all the text that's in the video, but clearly it's something anti-Chinese imperialism, is what I can gather just from my ignorant point of view.
Yeah, he started the founding leaders of the New Power Party.
Yeah.
He also has a band called Metal Clone X with Marty Friedman.
That I didn't know, but that doesn't surprise me. Marty gets around.
Yeah, he lives in Japan.
Yeah.
In that area. That's where he's big in Japan, man.
Yeah. Well, these guys are the kings of Taiwan.
Yeah.
And
not the same place, but I understand.
But
that the culture, love that type of stuff.
But Freddie's a big deal over there. Doris Ye is the bassist, and she's kind of like more than just a metal bassist over there. She's a real television celebrity model, kind of revered in that country. So
it's so interesting that this band is so huge there and they're so extreme,
right?
And then, but he's also a politician and she's a model, and it sort of blows my mind.
Yeah, it's hard to fathom, you know, that happening over here, you know.
Right. You're not going to see somebody from like Cannibal Corpse become like a politician. But we've had some weird politicians in America, so I
it happens.
You know, I mean, we've had Schwarzenegger and is a fucking governor.
Right.
And trying to think about anybody from a band.
Well, I mean, but Trump. I mean, that's a weird one. He's a reality television star, you know? Yeah. Anyway, so, the thing is, a new album's very keyboard driven.
Yes.
But in the past, they've used a lot of like instruments there, like, you know, traditional folk instruments and stuff, like I think it's called the eru or something, is that Chinese violin,
right?
Traditional instrument.
But that's what I was noticing about this album, from the song that we heard, extreme vocals, but such a overpowering amount of keyboards. It was almost like a power metal AOR type vibe to the songs, still extreme.
And the guitars were very power metal-y too.
Yeah.
Maybe following along with the keyboards and stuff, but but I like that kind of clash of, and that, you know, they don't care about them. Just like they'll mash up whatever.
It's like a strange juxtaposition between the extreme and the beautiful, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the only real major band I can think of that, I mean, you hear some of this stuff happening in Finland with like Winter Sun or something. Right. But it's not something that tends to be a thing in even European metal where you would mash those things together. You get the odd band that does it, but...
Well, you get the band that uses keyboards as a... Insomnium and Twelve of the Sun, they use keyboards as part of the overall vibe of the song.
But it's riff driven.
Yes. Yeah. And this is very power metal style keyboards.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is totally different.
Right, yeah.
It works, question mark, but...
I think they're an interesting band. It's nothing I ever really listened to over and over and over again, but I've listened to their albums enough to where I can call myself like a... Like, I like what they do. I just wish I understood more about the band, you know? Right. I feel, like, a lot out of place whenever I listen to them. Like, I don't really understand what the lyrical message is. Even if you go on their social media, they have, you know, like, the name in English, but then all the stuff they write is in a different language that I can't interpret. So I don't know. It's hard. Yeah. I'm an outsider looking in.
So what do you want to talk about this Patreon thing for Banger?
Yeah, so Banger TV is doing a Patreon. They've been doing it apparently since May, but this is today they released a second YouTube video, kind of announcing that they were going to be going for another goal on Patreon. They want to try to get to like $10,000 of income a month, and they're already like halfway there. They want to get to that level so they can keep doing shows like Lock Horns and Overkill Reviews and all the other shows they do. They had that great little Shredder competition show.
That was great. I really enjoyed that.
And they said that, they figured it out. Like, if they said like if 1 or 2% of their viewership would just pitch in $5 a month, that would help them get to that point. And I was just thinking, like, $5 a month, I could do that. Like, that's, like just bring your lunch from home one extra day a month and you got it covered. So I became a member today. I'm a member of a few Patreons, just like really small contributions. It doesn't take much. Just if you can, you can even do like a dollar. But yeah, like what they do for metal as a community is like a thing, a service that they don't need. No one ever asked them to do. They just decide to do it. I think these shows are invaluable, just to like us as far as like keep documenting our own history, keeping making discussions like community discussions on a global level about what we want to talk about in terms of genre categorization and all that kind of stuff. It's like, and then the Overkill Reviews are a great show too. So
I don't really watch those too much.
So donate. So become a Patreon, because, I think Patreon is one of those things where it really works for a YouTube channel as opposed to like a band. Like in a band should be doing like a Kickstarter.
I know
or
a lot of podcasts
campaign,
do it too.
Podcasts and stuff like that.
I've never touched that.
Right.
14 years we've been doing this. I've been doing the show.
Yeah.
Never wanted to. I don't know. It's just.
No. I mean,
we could.
I think
we just have to make it worthwhile, and I haven't figured that part out yet. You know what I mean?
And I think it's one of those things where you tend to do it if you have it, because you have to do it. Because when you do like a thing like this, like, because they're promising like if we get this goal, we can do this many per week, et cetera, et cetera. That's the kind of thing you have to do, and not it's easier for some people to do it than others. But I think that these guys just do. This is the show that teenage me would have wanted to watch when I was a young metalhead growing up.
Oh yeah,
and that the fact that there are young metalheads growing up now that get to have this on YouTube. I'm totally down to support that. So if you can support it, because there's so many reaction video channels now that have Patreons going, I don't have anything against reaction videos per se.
Sounds like you do. But
they're doing Patreons for reaction videos, and a lot of them are getting funded by metal audiences. And I just think, like,
are you? Is this certain one you're talking about, or
there's so many of them now. It used to be just like a few that I would know. Now, like there's so many reaction channels on YouTube for specifically like people who don't listen to metal reacting to metal.
Right.
So like the Vin and Sori channel, the Christians React to Metal channel, which is really big. And they, you know, hey, fair play to them. I actually think they're interesting. I have little patience for those videos though. After a while, I can't really watch through them too much, but the Lost in Vegas channel, they're really big. They have like close to like a million subscribers or whatever.
I've watched a few of those.
It's all entertaining in the brief moment, but you don't get anything valuable out of it. You know what I mean? Like, and I think like, hey, if you can subscribe to those or if you can support their Patreons, because I know they have Patreons, I've heard them talk about them, then you can maybe also support Banger TV, which, you know, is doing something really useful to the metal community by metalheads, right. You know, not by non-metalheads. So
made for metalheads, by metalheads.
By metalheads. That's the key. Yeah. And yeah, maybe I am annoyed about that. So.
Nah, I can't tell.
Yeah.
You know what I'm not annoyed about?
What's this?
Going to bed.
Oh, yeah. We've been going on a bit.
It's late. So I'd like to thank everybody for tuning into episode 213 of MSRcast. Of course, you can find us on our website, metalgeeks.net, MSRcast.com. We'll take you both to the same place. You can find us now on iTunes. Like us, subscribe, let people know about the show there. Really, if you do like the show, leave us a review. That really does help. Honestly, it does. You can find us on our Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, all at MSRcast. You can find, of course, our sister show at Metal Geeks on all those places as well. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And, of course, like I said, iTunes.
Yeah. Someone in the Discord today found our show on Stitcher.
Did they really?
And was mentioning it to me. I was like, all right, not bad. I've been plugging this in there a little bit.
I need to spend a little bit more time in Discord. I've played around with it a little bit, but I need to really get involved.
I want to shout out the guys in the Powerful podcast, Powerful, a power metal podcast. I know I've mentioned them on the show before, but they're going to be releasing new stuff soon. So everyone go sub to them and check them out. Four Gates and Larry Biscuit and Darko and Zelda Fan. Those are the four hosts of that show, and they do an amazing job. Great podcast. Really great podcast. Shout out to you guys.
Shout out.
Yeah.
Anybody else you want to shout out to? No, we're good.
I want to shout out Mikael Åkerfeldt.
Okay.
Because 20 years.
I can get on board with that.
20 years of My Arms, Your Hearse. And I know I give him a hard time lately because I'm not into them, their new stuff that much anymore. But I listened to My Arms, Your Hearse today for the first time in a long time. And I remembered what it was I loved so much about that band. And I was listening to Blackwater Park the other day, too. Kind of been on this Opeth little... like
Blackwater Park's still a phenomenal sidekick album.
Blackwater Park is... if someone told me that they thought I was like a top 10 metal album of all time, I wouldn't be mad.
What? Okay, so... now that we're on this topic real quick, what is your favorite Opeth album of all time?
Blackwater Park.
Really?
I mean, yeah, without a doubt.
Mine is Deliverance.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
There's nothing wrong. I love Blackwater Park, but I think Deliverance, the last 2 to 3 minutes of that title track,
yeah,
it's like the ultimate piece of metal for me ever.
I can't disagree.
It's so good.
That's a great song altogether. I mean, yeah. This album, My Arms, Your Hearse, I think to me is like my second favorite Opeth album.
It's a great song.
Because not only is, you know, obviously Demon of the Fall is a epic masterpiece and one of the only times I was scared for my life in a metal show at the Engine Room when the entire venue turned into a mosh pit and not even quite clinging to the bar were you safe.
Wow. I think I remember that.
It was insane. Anyway, just this album is a masterpiece. I forgot that the album flows in, like every song kind of flows into each other.
Yeah.
And like at the end of every song,
there's acoustic bits.
He sings the title of the next song. Like it's the last lyric. Like just all those little
details. He did that live too. He's like, Mikael Åkerfeldt is one of my favorite, you know, death vocalists because he's so clear and so, you know, coherent.
Yeah.
But it's so funny when you see him live. He's like super fucking brutal vocal, and then all of a sudden he's like, "Thank you. Our next song is It's I love that.
I always appreciate that.
Because I hate when bands they have to do. You don't have to keep that same vocal while you're talking about the song between songs.
Yeah.
Like, dude.
Yeah.
Save your voice to when you sing. We know you have a regular voice. You're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I that's one of my pet peeves for like local bands when I hear them do that. It's like, come on, guy. I'm going to see you hauling your amps out of here. Just chill.
You know? Right. So Opeth just put a live album, Blu-ray of, deal out live at Red Rocks.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because the last Devin Townsend, it was the same show Devin Townsend played.
Mm-hmm.
Actually a buddy of mine was there.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And there's this, like a little documentary video that Opeth put out recently, like a little clip. I guess Michael just got a GoPro. He was walking around with it. At the very end of the video, he runs into Devin Townsend. He's like, "Do you even know how to use that?" He's like, "No." He's like, "Let me show you." So he like grabs it and they start walking around.
I need to watch that.
And it's really cool because like you could see like the actual what the Red Rocks amphitheater from the stage because he points it out to like it's fucking rock,
right?
It's like in the dressing room, there's actually fucking huge rocks in the dressing room. It's pretty cool.
There's like the wall or something?
Yeah, like the wall is part of it. It's just like they put the building on top of this.
Yeah, wow.
And my buddy who was there said they actually gave out seat cushions to sit on because you're sitting on fucking rock.
Nice.
It's crazy. Nice. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've only watched a couple of clips from the live album, but it's only 10 songs. It's not, you know, they could have done a little bit more, I think.
Right.
But Demon of the Fall is one of the songs on there.
Yeah.
And you're not a fan of this version?
I just think that it was like, this song demands a certain intensity. And if you can't bring that intensity live, just leave it off the set list almost, you know, because when I heard him do this live in 2002, like my entire soul shook. I mean, he almost wrecked the venue with this song. So don't come out with a half baked version.
Who was that?
Of it.
Who was on that tour?
That was with Moonspell and
was it Hypocrisy?
Yeah, I feel like it might have been. I saw Hypocrisy so many times back in those days.
They're touring again next year.
Yeah,
Hypocrisy, Flesh God Apocalypse, and this band called Animus.
Yeah.
That we're going to play probably on the next episode.
Yeah.
Really good. They're on the new, the Death is Just the Beginning compilation.
Which I'm excited about that compilation. Yeah.
There's some old stuff on there too, but it's just that's some of the old Death is Just the Beginning compilation.
Classic series.
Got me into so many bands.
Oh, yeah.
First time I ever heard like Deicide and stuff like that. I was like, wow.
They were so varied too. They just had all sorts of weird stuff on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Very good stuff. All right. Well, I think that's it.
Yep.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of MSRcast. Let's let Michael and the boys end us tonight.
Yeah.
Let them take over. So this is Demon of the Fall, My Arms, You're Hers. 20 years. Can I believe that?
Unbelievable.
Getting old, man.
Yep.
All right. Well, thanks again. And one last thing I have to say.
Stay metal.
No, that's not what we say.
Keep it.
I stay metal. It's hard to keep it metal.
Keep it metal.
That's right. Thank you.
Freakazoids. Thanks for listening to another fine podcast brought to you by MSR Productions. All rights reserved, blah, 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 blah. For reviews, archives of our podcasts, and all your other metal geekery needs, please visit metalgeeks.net. Keep it geeky. Keep it metal.